Smith & Jones on a Wednesday afternoon hump day edition of Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. And we've got another busy one coming for you over the course of the next hour. Special guests. Not that all the guests aren't special. Let's be clear about that. Maybe I should rephrase that. But hey, as much as we love talking to Stephen Brunt, he is a special guest. We've got another special one coming on later on this hour as former Toronto Raptor and Canadian O'Shea Brissett from the Indiana Pacers will be joining us on the program today. So we will talk to O'Shea towards the bottom of the hour, right around 1:30, as we will discuss his new deal with the Pacers. A three-year contract for O'Shea. He gets to Indiana on a 10-day, then gets a second 10-day, and then poof, almost right away, a three-year guaranteed deal for O'Shea Brissett. We will break it all down with him and take a look at the Indiana Pacers as they stay in the thick of things in the play-in tournament, the play-in seeding in the Eastern Conference, as the Pacers entering action tonight are ninth in the East, the Washington Wizards at 10th, and Jonesy. We'll get into this and so many other things with Stephen Brunt in a few minutes' time. We're going to kind of just sort of talk all things Toronto sports, Jays, Leafs, Raptors, Argos, and more when we bring Stephen into the conversation. But Toronto, in spite of a valiant effort last night, another solid performance. It was another fourth quarter where they just couldn't get it done and close it down, which has kind of been the norm now for the better part of the last week. The Raptors lose to the Clippers. They go 1-3 on the road trip, and now entering action tonight with the Wizards playing the Milwaukee Bucks. Washington has a 3.5 game lead in the standings over the Raptors, and if the final nail isn't hammered down, it's in there and it's three quarters of the way down. It's not looking good for the Raptors here with six games remaining in the season.
Yeah, it's they're up against it, Eric. No question. They are up against it. They're going to need some big help now. It would have been nice to steal that one last night. They were right there. Couldn't make plays at the end. Critical turnover, couple of missed shots on good looks. This is a team that has recalibrated and is trying to learn how to win without some of the guys that normally help take them to wins. Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green over the last couple of years, Norman Powell. The team has changed, so they have to kind of learn how to win again, and it's going to be a challenge, and we know that's a long process, and it might take till next year at this rate to really solidify that, consolidate it, and understand what to do down the stretch consistently.
You know, the tough thing as well, too, I'm trying to figure out, Jonesy, how to say this properly, because I don't want to be guilty of dumping on the guy or making it like it's one player, because it's not. It clearly isn't. And I'm always and always have been from the school of it's tough to be critical of one guy or even of one play without recognizing, well, if it weren't for the other 17 things that he did, though, you might not have even been in a position to win a game or to have that play matter, that bad play. Now, that said, Pascal Siakam, late in the game, a couple of times around the rim, shots rimming out, unable to finish on layups, late in the game, whether you should or shouldn't have kicked the ball ahead to Kem Birch on a fast break, either way, you go in kind of out of control, pick up the offensive foul on the charge. It has been a theme or a consistent issue at times this year, Siakam in the fourth quarter, especially in crunch time. And Jonesy, again, as I say, not being critical, just pointing out it is a fact. It's happened. It's happened with regularity. And how much of that is, well, it's still a relatively young player learning, and maybe by this time next year then, he has learned and he has taken his lumps and now he knows what it takes. How much of it is just the struggles of the year? Like, where do you weigh in on the sort of pro and the con? Because even a couple of nights ago, I'm not going to sit here and be overly critical of Pascal Siakam for a late game decision or poor decision or a wrong decision or whatever against the Clippers, and then forget the fact that, oh yeah, he had 39 against the Lakers and you wouldn't have won that game without his play. Or you wouldn't even been in that game last night against the Clips without his scoring and his performance and his production, et cetera. So how do you kind of assess it?
As I said before, I think they're trying to learn. It's a new role for Pascal. We saw it kind of at times last year during the regular season. Then when the break hit because of COVID, it was like they had to come back, and Pascal especially, relearn it, acquire the skill of how to close games because he's the main guy now. And we've seen him have some issues this year at the end of the year. And that's not at the end of the game. It's not a bad thing. It's learning. There's winning and there's experience. And right now he's getting the experience, learning what not to do. Like I looked at it once, because the game was so late and with everything else going on today, I didn't get up and watch the game again like I normally do. I'll take a look at it tonight at some point. But on that last play, I actually thought he made a good decision early because of, if my mind serves me correctly, where the ball was stolen. It was Kawhi that turned it over. Pascal got it probably about the three-point line at his own end. Ken Birch was running the far lane in front of him. And I know everybody was like, oh, pass it ahead. Wait a minute. I'm a little guy, and I know that I'm the one that's supposed to be in charge of the ball. And this is me talking. And I can see not passing it to my big guy at center and have him dribble it all the way down court with maybe not that kind of skill set. I don't know. Ken Birch, maybe he does. And have guys chasing him who might be faster than him. I mean, there were some guys like an Allen Iverson or a De'Aaron Fox. These guys are faster with the ball than they are without it. But I'm not so sure about Ken Birch. And this is not a statement on Kim's skill set. But maybe Pascal does take three or four more dribbles and get past the midcourt line, veer to his left a little bit. I think there was somebody coming up the left side, but there was another Raptor there. Maybe that guy runs wide and he takes the Clipper player with him. Pascal moves more towards the middle of the middle lane. Now Paul George has to come towards the middle, and it spaces the floor better for a late pass to Ken Birch. Maybe when you're around the three-point line at the other end, or between the three-point line at center at the other end, and it's too far for anybody to recover, and maybe he catches it and goes up for a dunk, or maybe he catches it, there's one dribble and a dunk. He's not handling the ball half the court. So, you know, while people wanted to, you got to give that up. Yeah, you do, but there's a timing as to when you give it up as well. And I just thought the spacing was bad. Pascal tried to make a play, and Paul George is a defensive guy and figured out the spacing right there and took the charge. So, yeah, it's a critical turnover. But, you know, the way I broke it down there, I'm sure they're looking at that in the video room with Pascal, and next time he'll do better. It's just unfortunate that it came at that point, and it was so glaring in the public eye. That being said, we know there's all kinds of ways to win or lose games.
Well, and I agree with that, Jonesy. With that one play specifically, and listen, I watched it a couple of times, but no, I didn't go back and rewatch the game either. But I you just touched on it a little bit here. How much of it is on the ball handler, Pascal, for not maybe going a little bit wider, creating a little bit more separation? How much of it is on his teammate running the lane and not spreading out and winging out, fanning out a little bit more to create more of a separation? Because that's where you could say, well, hold on, maybe Kem needs to take a bit of a different angle. Because to be clear, I'm not saying kick it ahead to Ken Birch right away at center court, let him dribble it up. But I think Pascal had the opportunity, once he even got past center, even as he was approaching the arc, to give it to Kem, and maybe Kem, as he was cutting on that right side, then lay it in. But Pascal decided to keep himself, go to the tin. But had they been fanned out a little bit further, had they created a little bit more separation, now is that on the ball handler more, or is it on the guy trying to get the pass in Ken Birch? Because I think then Birch has to take a little bit of the blame, for lack of a better term, on this one as well. But, you know, it was tough, Jonesy, because you look back now at this last week and think about, you know, a nip and tuck game where you had the lead a couple of times, you got to the fourth quarter, and you imploded against the Nets. And then a nip and tuck game, you had the lead a couple of times, and you go to the fourth quarter, and you lose against the Nuggets. And the exact same script against the Utah Jazz. Nip and tuck game, three straight games, the exact same thing. Back and forth, exchanging leads, fourth quarter, boom, you can't get it done. You finally get it done and get on the right track against the Lakers, and then right back to the same thing against the Clips. Nip and tuck, boom, can't get it done in the fourth. Toronto that close. Forget about winning all five, but that close to taking, you know, three out of five, maybe four even. Hell, even two. how much different would the standings would look right now. But to go 1-4 over that stretch, and this was the stretch we said, by the time we hit the air next week when that road trip's over, we're going to know, well, 3.5 back with 6 to go. Yeah.
That's
not
tough.
Looking
well,
good. The only thing that maybe saves you, the only thing, and this is like if you're trying to grasp onto, it's a slight glimmer of hope, is if the Washington Wizards were to lose tonight to the Bucks and then you beat the Wiz tomorrow, you're 2 back with 5 to go. But as you're about to say, I'm sure, it's also not just the games, it's the loss column.
It's 4 in the loss column. And that's, I mean, you the only thing you can impact is your win column and loss column. You can't, unless you play them, you can't impact the other team's loss column. So you have to hope that there's help in there. So, and Eric, just to put a bow on that, that play with Siakam and Birch, it's philosophical too, the way you run your 2-on-1. Like a lot of times in Europe, Pascal would have given, like you give that ball up right away and Birch takes a couple dribbles and everybody floods towards Birch. Now he gives it back to Siakam and the lane's open for him. So again, that's learning though. That's where you sit down and philosophically start hashing things out. Here's what we want to do in that situation. Here's how we can correct it. As I said, you have to look at it as experience, gaining experience.
Well, we can discuss the Toronto Raptors and much more with our next guest, as we're going to bring him into the conversation and just hit on a lot of Toronto topics, just kind of go around the Toronto sports world with the things winding down for the Toronto Raptors. It's just beginning for the Toronto Blue Jays, and we are getting set for, hopefully, a long playoff run for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we can get into much, much more as well with our friend. And, of course, you hear him right here on Sportsnet 590 at The Fan on Writer's Block regularly and contributing on Sportsnet TV and .ca and Mr. Everything, Stephen Brunt. Stephen, thanks for the time today.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for taking the time, Stephen. Maybe I can tie two sort of topics into one here to start with you. As the news officially comes out today that the Toronto Blue Jays announced they will be moving up to Buffalo to Salem Field as of June 1st. That will be their second temporary home this season. We'll see if there's a third home, if they can ever actually get back to Toronto and to Rogers Center. But Stephen, when you tie in what you've seen with the Raptors this season, having to play the entire year down in Tampa and essentially having a road game for every game, how difficult could this be for the Toronto Blue Jays in 162 games if they don't have a chance to actually have their home field and the regular confines of Rogers Center?
Yeah, I think they did they played really well in Buffalo last year in the short season, but that's you alluded to the difference, right? There's a big difference between 162 and 60, so or 81 and 30 home games. It is different. I think this early part of the season, because Dunedin is their spring training base and a lot of guys have houses there, or at least places, or at least homes there of some sort, that they're used to being there for at least a couple of months. It probably wasn't as tough, in some ways, because they know the facility and they know the area. And the guys who were in Buffalo last year, I guess they're familiar with that, although, I don't know what their living circumstances were. I assume they were in a hotel last year. I assume they'll be in a hotel this year. But, it's tricky. Just think of your own life. If you were, and guys who have families have to deal with that. Try and figure out, a lot of guys who have kids, if kids are in school, summer's when they normally reconnect with their families, the families join them. If you're bouncing from location to location, it is difficult, and it's got to be unsettling, and it doesn't make your job any easier, guaranteed. So, but yeah, welcome to 2020, 2021, and let's hope not 2022.
Stephen, we know how fickle and what creatures of habit athletes are. You just pointed a bunch of stuff out. And Eric and I said it at the beginning of the year about the Raptors, and people kind of brushed us off like, they'll adjust. But, there's some guys, if the oranges aren't cut right at halftime on a soccer team or a basketball team, they're thrown off, let alone something as a major life change like this. What kind of an impact do you think it has on performance? I mean, it's a little bit different if you're, the Jays or you're the Raptors, for that matter, waking up in 80-degree weather. It'll set your mind at ease a little bit, but it's still not home. It's still not what you're used to and you know, what your regular routines have been for, well, years and years.
Yeah, I think it is. It's about routine and habit, and you can dismiss that and say, well, they're really well treated and they're looked after in every aspect of their lives. You know, they don't have to make any, if when they travel, everything's taken care of, their food is taken care of, all of those things are taken care of for them, which is true. You know, again, if you've ever been around a professional team and the way they travel, like, you know, professional athletes don't know how to check into hotels because they don't ever have to. You know, somebody does it for them. It's a lot of things, and both the, you know, the Raptors organization, the Jays organization, have jumped through hoops to make this as normal as possible, right? To create a home base that feels like a home base, to make sure that the locker rooms, the dressing rooms are up to big league standards, to make sure the workout facility, all that stuff. Like, they've done
paid through those hoops, paid a lot of money.
Oh, an enormous amount. Like, we didn't, you know, just what the Jays, you know, did with Salem Field in Buffalo last year, like, never mind what now they have since gone through a whole other series of upgrades. But yeah, enormous amounts of money and there's no payback, right? It's not money that it doesn't, you know, you don't get a dollar back for it, right? It's an investment that does not show any return. So they've tried what they could. They've done the best they could do. And, you know, we first heard this from the Jays players last year in Buffalo, kind of saying, you know, it's, yeah, appreciative of that. But it's still, yeah, just, again, it's like, think of, try and put yourself in that position as best you can. And think of being, you know, uprooted, sent to a strange city. I've spent a lot of months of my working life on the road over the last, you know, several decades, and I love it. I love to travel, but, you know, there's a being on the road, traveling, you know, visiting somewhere, being somewhere for work is not the same as relocating there and making it your temporary home. And I think it would be just unsettling, you know, I don't think, you know, not having a crowd behind you matters maybe as much as you, as a fan, you want to believe that you're the wind in the sails, right? But there is something to that. Like, if you look at the crazy home records across different sports, you know, there's huge differentials, especially in basketball, especially in a sport like soccer. You know, there's an enormous home differential in those sports that has to have something to do with the crowd.
Listen, I wholeheartedly agree with you, Stephen. And maybe I'm guilty of being too close to it. But, you know, Jonesy and I have referenced a number of times this season, I think maybe you have. I know many others have, that the Toronto Raptors, to me, aren't as bad as they've played this season, or at least as bad as their record says they are. And I know the old cliche of, well, you are what your record says you are. I know they've dealt with COVID and the health and safety protocols. They've had multiple injuries. I know they're not as good as they were 2 years ago. They're not a championship team, et cetera. But I also don't believe that they're a team that's 12 games below 500. I think they're better than that. And to your point, Stephen, I look and go 16-16 at home, quote unquote home. If this team is playing at Scotiabank Arena, to me, they're not a 500 team like they are in Tampa. They're also not 11-23 on the road. They've been one of the best road teams in the league for the last 5 years, and they're 12 below on the road alone. And I think that speaks to, because the road is home, home is road, there isn't a home. You're just always away. And I think I don't think this team is sitting where they are right now if they're playing games in Toronto this past season and if they actually had their friendly confines.
I think that's absolutely reasonable, Eric. Like, and again, especially when, you know, with the, you know, the when the COVID bomb dropped on them, you know, mid-season. I know other teams and other sports have dealt with COVID to some degree. But that's when the season hit the rocks. No, they're not a championship team, you know, but they're a playoff team. You know, I think that's not, you know, you're not being a homer if you say, boy, if things had played out more normally, these guys would be in the top seven. Like, that's absolutely legit. And I think so you have, you know, the cataclysm of the COVID stuff and when it hit and what it did to them. And then you have the kind of, you know, the week to week, day to day, game to game, no home, having no permanent home, and having that kind of just wear on a team. Again, you can understand how it would just get old and how it would wear on athletes. It would just wear on anybody. Never mind athletes. It would take some of the steam out of an organization. It's just, it's, you know, it's not so much about sports as about human nature, I'd say.
Stephen, the other thing too is, and as much as people look at Toronto, oh, it's, you know, it's it, be it the Jays or the, well, not so much the Leafs, but the Jays, the Raptors, TFC. Oh, it's another country. Hey, wait a minute. The travel from Toronto is pretty good. And Eric and I have talked about this a lot of times. And it wasn't until former Raptor assistant coach, you know, now analyst for ESPN, PJ Carlissimo said, I had no idea the travel was so good in Toronto. I mean, if you think about, you know, the Blue Jays or the Raptors, it's an hour to New York to play, you know, for the Raptors, the Nets and the Knicks. It's an hour to Boston. It's an hour to Philly. It's 57 minutes to D.C. It's like an hour and a half, maybe at max, hour 10 to Chicago, 43 minutes to Cleveland, 38 minutes to Detroit. Like you got all these teams that you play, Indiana for the Raptors. You're a hop skip. Like you're not on the plane. I mean, you know, PJ Carlissimo was talking about this. He's, when we were in Portland, it was 2 hours before we got anywhere. And that's another thing too, what Eric was talking about, home road. And I think about the Jays playing in Florida. I mean, that's, you're going up and down the coast when you're playing the Yankees and the Red Sox and people like that in your division.
Yeah, it complicates it for sure. You know, and you're right about, you know, for any team, like you sit back and understand what teams that, you know, like what the Edmonton, you know, what the Edmonton Oilers have to do for travel. Like think of teams that are really kind of out there on one end of the sports map and what they have to do to get to home games or to get to road games, you know. But yeah, it's convenient in a lot of ways. It is an easy city for an athlete in a lot of ways. They all live down close to the arena or to the ballpark. You know, the airport's easily accessible. Yep, there's a border, but for them it's not that big an issue. And again, it's familiar. You know, the practice facility is close by. Everything is familiar. Everything's easy. The guys that have been with the team more than a year or two, it's at very least a second home for them. So, it's like everything's been turned on its head. And again, I know there's lots of people listening to this who say, "Yep, it's my life's been turned on its head as well," and that's absolutely true. So this is just but one tentacle of the monster that's got us all ensnared right now.
Speaking with Stephen Brunt, Stephen, I honestly don't even know how to, you know, come at this question or how to phrase it, because I acknowledge that, whether it be as a parent, simply as a human, I understand the idea of, well, just because they're doing it doesn't mean that we should do it. But I'm going to ask it anyways. The U.S., right, wrong, or otherwise, and I know that their vaccinations are far ahead of ours in terms of the people that have been vaccinated, the people that have had both of their vaccinations, they're further ahead with all that. I get that. But the numbers still aren't necessarily great in the United States. However, in most places, well, in every city, they're playing their games in arenas or ballparks, and many of them, they have fans. At what point do you think the Raptors, the Leafs, the Blue Jays, if they have any power at all, when do they push back or become more vocal about pushing back and saying, man, we can't keep going like this? From a cost standpoint, we can't keep going like this. And push back towards the government saying, like, we need to be able to play our games. Even if we're not allowed to have fans, we need to play our games in our own building by next fall. Do you think that's coming or what?
Yeah, I think that's coming. But it's going to be a very delicate discussion. But now's the time to start. It's a great conversation to have right now, because it's funny. I was just reading a story just a second before I came on. Where the Broadway theaters are going to reopen in September, the middle of September. So, you know, we all know how hard hit New York was, and especially New York City was. But the lights are going to go back on in September, which is about, I think, 4 months earlier than anybody thought about 4 months ago. You know, everybody was saying kind of the beginning of 2022, maybe, but no, they're coming back. And we do see fans in the stands in sports. And you're right. They're different. Every jurisdiction in America is different. Every set of rules is different. As your mom would say about the reckless kid in the neighborhood, just because he jumps off a cliff, you know, doesn't mean you have to, right? I heard that a lot. I don't know about you, but
yes,
but
I did.
We are at a pivot. We're approaching a pivot point here, I think, you know, which is, you know, how do we re-enter life to some degree? And again, not without, you know, any kind of cautions or any kind of restrictions, but how do we start kind of coming back here to, maybe not in quite life as we knew it before the pandemic, but some kind of middle ground. And what do those vaccinations mean? And I think not just kind of the business value of these guys of sports coming back, but there's a holistic value for all of us to have things, coming back to normal, right? I think you got to give people, it's time to kind of hold the carrot out there and say, get your vaccines and play by the rules. And this is where we could be or will be in the fall. Now, for the teams, the thing they have to avoid and have tried to avoid, all the sports have tried to avoid, is this notion that they're getting special treatment or special status or that they're jumping the queue or any of that, right? So they're being extraordinarily careful about that. But, I'm not sure if the Toronto Blue Jays, for instance, I'm not sure if they've reached the 85% vaccine threshold yet. But that's the goal in baseball. If you get 85% of your personnel and, not just players, but team personnel vaccinated, they're going to lift some restrictions. And, if you have a group of, visiting team coming in, 26 players plus some personnel, and they're all, 90% of them are vaccinated and they're going to fly in on a charter and go stay at a team hotel and then go play games. How do we assess that as a public health risk if more than, if we start getting to the 50, 60, 70% of Canadians vaccinated?
Mm-hmm.
That's not saying, boy, bring back our sports. It's about, let's bring back, how are we going to bring back our lives? And that, so music and theater and restaurants and bars and, museums and all of the things that people do with their lives. How are we going to bring that back? But I think, we ought to start having that conversation. And I think we ought to watch what happens in the States. That's the other thing. I saw that game in Texas on, opening day with the Rangers and the Jays playing there with a full house, and you kind of flinch watching it. I watched the NFL draft with what looked like a great big party going on in Cleveland, everybody shoulder to shoulder, all vaccinated though. If those events don't set off, great waves of contagion, I think it's worth noting that as well. Let's kind of look at what doesn't happen here as well and learn from it. I'm all for following the science, but there's no but. I'm all for following science. Let's start to talk about what's next. And again, for the Jays, for the Raptors, for the Leafs in the playoffs, potentially, I don't think they're going to be able to cross the border. Yeah, I think those are, for Toronto FC, I think they have the right to at least ask.
Here, Stephen, I know we're running up against the clock. You said the teams, and they have been very, very willing to look at the big picture and not push back too much. And, you think of the Raptors and the Jays, especially, as you said, shelling out all that money. It's not like it's going to come back. It's not like it's going to, rebound or pay dividends in any other way. You just need that to get going. If the teams start to say to the government and push back a little bit, hey, we'd like to make some changes, at what point do the fans jump on behind the teams and go, yeah, we want changes too? I mean, it's kind of like standing behind a tough guy who's ready to throw punches, and you're standing behind him going, yeah, and I'll get a kick in there too when the guy's down. Like, at what point do the fans start making noise?
It's a good question, and kind of plays then. And this is where, look, there's no precedent, right? I don't know how these things play out. This is my first pandemic, but I think when people in their daily lives can't do stuff, which is still the case where we're sitting right now, it'd be a bit much to ask them to then kind of lobby for other people to be able to do things. I guess that's. That's kind of the simplistic version, right? Like, people right now are kind of still looking at their restricted lives. They're not going to go to the wall to get the Jays back to the Rogers Center or get to the Raptors back in town in the fall or whatever it's going to be. I choose to be optimistic. I choose to think that in the next couple of months, we're going to see the impact of vaccines. We're going to see what's happened in the UK, for instance, with the vaccination rollout there. And, and again, a place that has been a bit erratic in their response, but more like us, and are now kind of coming back to normal. or something like normal. So I think people kind of, once they can take a deep breath in their own lives, are going to look at this and say, hang on a second, why not? It's time. And I think some of our leaders will probably wet their fingers and hold them up in the air and say, yeah, maybe it is time to do that.
Stephen, we appreciate the time today. We probably could have done the entire hour, so we'll get you back and we'll dig into things a little bit more, because we didn't even get to the Toronto Maple Leafs and the impact that it might have on them playing all season in Canada at home, and then all of a sudden the playoffs hit, and you know what? Go somewhere else and try and get it done. Yep. Oh yeah, against a bunch of opponents that you don't know. So you know what? We'll do that next week. We'll get you back and we'll continue the all Toronto things chat with you. Thanks for this.
All right, sounds good, guys. See ya.
Thanks, Stephen.
There is Stephen Brunt. We'll take the break. Come back with O'Shea Brissett of the Indiana Pacers on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to Stephen Brunt for joining us to kick off the program. Today we're going to get to a special guest in just a couple of moments, Jonesy, but I wanted to pass along to the audience, if you're listening right now, folks, listen in closely. Be the envy of the neighborhood. Craftsman and Sportsnet are teaming up to give one lucky winner the chance to win $20,000 in cash and Craftsman tools and also storage to create their own dream garage. To enter for your chance to win the Craftsman Dream Garage Contest, visit sportsnet.ca/craftsman and enter weekly to increase your chances. Want to note, no purchase is necessary. The contest ends June 20th. See full rules for details. Craftsman tools are available at Lowe's and Rona stores across Canada. You can also get them at Amazon.ca. All right, Jonesy, I mentioned our special guest coming up. He's from the Indiana Pacers. It's game day for Indiana. Tonight they host the Sacramento Kings. It's the 8 o'clock tip-off between the Pacers and the Kings, and a very important game for the Pacers as well. When you look at the standings in the East, we've been focusing in Toronto so much on the play-in tournament for the Toronto Raptors, and if they're able to slide into that 10th seed, as we've talked about already in the show, the Raptors now 3.5 back of the Washington Wizards for that 10th seed. Washington could still maybe track down Indiana, the 9th seed, and Indiana still eyeing the possibility of maybe jumping up to the 8th seed. So we enter action tonight. The Hornets are in 8th. They're only a game and a half up on the Pacers. Pacers in 9th, only a half game up on the Wizards. It is tight right now between 8, 9, 10. So a very important game between the Pacers and Kings going tonight. And one of the guys that will be a key part of it, and he has been playing outstanding basketball for the Indiana Pacers since originally joining on a 10-day and now inking a long-term deal with the Pacers. Joining us on Smith & Jones is O'Shea Brissett. O'Shea, let's kind of rewind a little bit here. Take me back to first signing on with the Pacers. Before we deal with the contract and all that, and we're thrilled for you, no doubt, but take me back to when you first had the opportunity to get to Indiana and how it all went down. In the midst of this crazy world we're all living through, the COVID times and the pandemic and trying to deal with the NBA season, and you're just trying to stay ready, waiting for your opportunity, and boom, it comes. Walk us through what happened.
Just the whole time after the bubble was really, staying ready mentally and physically, obviously, doing what I can, because, I felt like I did what I had to do at the bubble, to deserve a spot on a team. And, I got that call. I was obviously very, very happy, but, I knew that it was still just a tryout, really having to go prove myself once I got here. And, the first 2 10-days were kind of up and down, not knowing if I'm gonna get in, and sometimes getting in, and just being there and being for my teammates. But I felt like it was a great learning experience, honestly. Now I know, it's just always hard work. I just gotta always keep down and do what I gotta do, and it's just gonna pay off later on.
O'Shea, how much did it help that a guy like Nate knows your background and had worked with you and, knew what you were capable of doing, and you were part of a really, really good team in Toronto? How much did that help?
Helps a lot. Helps a lot. Coach Nate helped me last year learning just the different defensive schemes, and helped me offensively as well, my shot and stuff like that. In the bubble, we worked together a lot, just me and him one-on-one. And, it really helped gaining a friendship off the court. To where now, anything that happens on the court, it's like, you know, it's just easier because we have that bond, that friendship. So, you know, it's helped a lot for sure.
Speaking with O'Shea Brissett. O'Shea, when you talked about coming in on the 10-day and then the second one, and then how quickly did things come together, or how privy were you to even to the conversations that your agent was having with management and ultimately inking this 3-year deal? Because, I mean, this has got to be a dream come true for a young player to not be grinding through the 10 days and not just be wondering what's happening, to sign a guaranteed deal and to have some sort of assurance for your future. How quickly did that all come together, and how confident were you that things were maybe heading down that path?
Pretty fast. Came together pretty fast. You know, I didn't really play much my first one, and then the second one near the end, I was kind of playing a little more. But, you know, even then you kind of think about, you know, did I do enough? Did I do this? Did I do that? But, you know, Chad really, you know, saw a lot in me and really appreciates my game. And I respect that because, you know, everything I've done has led to this point. So, it came together pretty fast. So it was like, it wasn't anything that I was really expecting, honestly. But, you know, I'm grateful and happy that it happened.
What's the transition been like, O'Shea, fitting in with the Pacers and kind of, as you said earlier, it helps having, you know, Coach Nate being the head man. You probably are aware of some of the terminology, schemes, things. But in general, what's your transition been like fitting in with the Pacers?
Oh, it's been real easy. The guys are real welcoming. You know, from the first day, you know, they made me feel welcome to the team. Felt like I've been here for a while, you know, talking and cracking jokes and just being together. That was really, really helpful. From those guys to the coaching staff to, you know, everyone down the line, everyone's been real welcoming, helping me out and talking me through different things, anything I didn't understand. And, you know, I didn't feel anything else other than, you know, friendship and love when I got here. So it was really easy.
Speaking with O'Shea Brissett from the Indiana Pacers. O'Shea, I want to get back to the Pacers in a second and ask you about some of your teammates as well and the end of this season, the off season, the future ahead, et cetera. I want to get into all that with Jonesy as well. But let me look kind of big picture here. I referenced it earlier, you know, in the midst of everything we've been going through. Jonesy and I have asked this question to a lot of guys we've had on the show over the course of the last, you know, 6-12 months. What's the process been like for you? What's it been like on and off the floor to go from, you know, Toronto to the G League, to the bubble there, and then to the 10-day, and then finding the home and just kind of, you know, planting some roots a little bit, but doing all of these moves and shifts and the changes in your lives while, you know, the world's on fire around us. That can't be easy, just even trying to communicate with friends and families and staying safe and everything else. Like, how's that been mentally, physically, emotionally, everything for you the last, you know, like I say, 12 months or so?
You know, kind of dealing with it like, you know, any other thing, focusing on what I got and controlling what I can control. You know, I feel like everyone's in the same position, whether it's basketball or any other job. You know, we got to do what we can to really get through these times, stay together, stay healthy. So that's what I've really been doing, just going to the gym and working out and doing what I can to be ready for the games. And, you know, with everything else that's going on, that stuff is kind of out of my control. So I just, you know, really stay to myself and just try to stay as healthy as I can because, you know, I want to be able to play. I want to be able to be there for my teammates. And, you know, with everything that's going on, it's best to just kind of stay to yourself or stay to your family and just do what you got to do.
Hey, Jonesy, let me jump in for 1 second here. I just want to follow up on that, O'Shea. Going back to the bubble last summer when you were still with Toronto and you started up that sort of YouTube series, you're walking around with your camera, and I know you were online. You'd gone out and bought the camera and bought a bunch of gadgets, and you had all the latest tech and everything. Was that for you sort of therapeutic in a way, a little therapy for you, just trying to stay, you know, lighthearted and try and live in the moment and whatever and just trying to find a way to get through the monotony maybe of being locked down and in that bubble and in one hotel? Like, What spurred you to kind of to do that and to try and start up that series?
Yeah, exactly what you said. Honestly, the being there was kind of tough, really, for everyone. So everyone tried to find something they could do to really get their mind off of, you know, just basketball. You know, it's different now. Obviously, we're playing a lot of games now, but we're outside. We're able to do other things. Able to see our family. So really, doing that was just a way to just keep myself entertained and just do different things. And obviously, bring light to what we were doing inside the bubble for, you know, fans at home.
O'Shea, how much do you keep in touch with your guys in Toronto? You talk about last year, you know, the whole bubble experience, all of that. You were close to those guys, and we understand the business part of the league. And you know, you talk about family. Some of those guys were like family to you. How much are you in touch with them still? And how much do you keep an eye on what's going on, because they're fighting for their playoff lives like you guys?
Yeah, I talk to them a lot. Different guys on the team, we just have conversations here and there. Obviously, like you said, you know, they're focused on winning right now, and so are we. So, you know, I obviously watch and cheer them on, and, you know, still going to be supportive of them for sure, because, you know, they've helped me out a lot. So, yeah, I definitely keep up with them. Even the guys who, you know, got traded and are all over the place right now, we talk.
Speaking with O'Shea Brissett from the Indiana Pacers, O'Shea, one of the things we've been discussing over the course of this season from a Raptors perspective, certainly since the acquisition of Kem Birch as well, you've got Birch, you've got Boucher. You look ahead to the summertime, and obviously I'm sure you hope the Pacers, let alone the Raptors, many other teams are going on a long playoff run if you guys are able to get in. But when you look ahead to the qualifiers in Victoria, when you look at the potential playing in the Olympics, excuse me, how much is Canada basketball on your radar as well, and looking towards the future of what you could do, not just in the NBA, but maybe with the national program as well?
Yeah, playing for Team Canada has always been something that I'd love to do. Really started when I was, I think, like 16, 17. That was a great experience. And, you know, ever since that, I've always took any opportunity that I had to be there for them. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I know the rest of the guys around the league are, because, you know, it's a lot that's on the line with these qualifiers. So, pretty sure everyone's going to be there and be locked in.
O'Shea, same thing I asked you with your guys from Toronto and guys that, you know, Eric talked about that might be playing in the qualifier. It's crazy. Canada, we are at the point where we're going to have a full NBA team representing Canada. How much are you talking with those guys that you played with from past experiences, guys that you're looking forward to playing with Team Canada? How much are you communicating with them?
Well, we had a Zoom call with a lot of the guys who were going to come to the training camp and all that stuff. But, you know, like I said before, everyone's really focused on, you know, winning right now. So that's kind of on the back end of what we're, you know, focused on for right now, especially because, you know, the season's winding down.
Hey, let me jump in here, Eric,
yep,
with O'Shea. O'Shea, do you feel, I guess, a little bit more settled or Team Canada's more of a possibility now that you've got a contract? Because we know that kind of stuff can get in the way in the summer. Contracts and insurance, free agency, all those things. It must be a little bit more settling for you to feel, okay, I, that's something I don't have to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought that far, honestly, you know, being the fact that really just getting here and, you know, coaches putting me out there and really relying on me with stuff that we have to do here with Indiana. So, you know, that's been my main focus. And, you know, whatever happens after the season, then, you know, I'll start thinking about that.
Speaking with O'Shea Brissett from the Indiana Pacers. O'Shea, I referenced the playoffs and trying to get in and hopefully going on a long run. There's been a lot of chatter this season, but certainly in the last week or so, about the play-in. As a player, do you like it? It certainly gives you guys an opportunity right now. You'd be the ninth seed. You'd be on the outside looking in. But do you like having that added element, that added drama and the relevance of games then late in the season? What's your take on it?
I mean, yeah, I like it because it gives us a chance. But, you know, I don't really have anything to reference off of. This is only my second year, so I don't really know how it feels to be in the eighth seed or in the seventh seed or anything like that. But for right now, I'm loving it because, you know, we get that chance to get in there.
O'Shea, what's it been like this year? I mean, the bubble was one thing last year because you knew you weren't going to have people there. But as fans in some arenas slowly start to trickle back in, how much of a more normal feel are you getting? Or for you, it won't be normal till the arenas are crowded again and the noise is coming down from the roof.
Yeah, it definitely helps a lot, you know, seeing the fans out there cheering us on. But, you know, again, it still feels like the bubble. Just like what you said, it's not really going to feel 100% normal to We have, you know, everyone in there and stuff like that. But, you know, for right now, it helps because, you know, we definitely feed off the energy of the crowd and stuff like that.
Speaking with O'Shea Brissett, O'Shea, you know, I look at this team for Indiana, and again, I'll say, you know, fingers crossed for you personally that you guys are able to get in there and go on a run. But whether it happens this year or next, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong or if you don't agree, Jonesy and I have talked about it a lot over the course of the season. Outside of maybe Brooklyn with the big names and trying to stack up a lot of talent in the big three and everything else, I mean, they got the big four, the big five now, whatever. There's not a team in the East that I look at least as a fan and go, that's the one, or those are the two or three or four. It seems like it's really kind of wide open right now. And when I look at the Pacers and I look at especially the versatility that you guys have in the front court now, you know, whether it be with yourself and Sabonis and Turner, and then, you think of LeVert and Brogdon, it's a lot of talent on that team. It's just a matter of can you guys, like so many other teams, get healthy? So whether it happens this year or next, it seems like there's quite a core of talent that you guys are working with.
Yeah, you know, if you look down the standings of the conference, every team is really close right now with wins and losses. So, obviously, injuries suck, and, you know, they happen, obviously, throughout the course of the season. But, you know, like you just said, if we were able to get healthy and, you know, the last couple of games really string it together, then we'll be good because, you know, we do got a great team. So, like you said, honestly, it just comes down to being healthy because a lot of teams are really dealing with the same type of thing. But, you know, we'll be good. We got guys that are, you know, going to step in and do what they got to do over these next couple games.
Hey, O'Shea, we really appreciate you taking the time today, man. Best of luck down the stretch these last couple of weeks. And, you know, just stay safe and healthy, not just injury-wise, pandemic-wise, everything. Just be good, be safe, and we'll look forward to speaking again soon.
For sure. Thank you, guys. Appreciate that.
Take care, O'Shea.
Always great chatting with O'Shea Jonesy. Really happy for him, no doubt about it. Really happy to see a young Canadian get his chance and to go from, as I said when we started the interview, a 10-day to a guaranteed deal and the 3-year contract, as we discussed with him. Outstanding news for O'Shea, and hopefully big things to come for him, not only with the Pacers, but as we discussed, with Team Canada as well. All right, let's step aside for the break. We'll come back and get you set for Baseball Central at the top of the hour and a little bit more of Smith and Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Baseball Central coming up in just a couple of minutes at the top of the hour. We're back again tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern. But before we close, Jonesy, we didn't mention it off the top, and I was busting your chop yesterday saying that, you know, we were going to crack a cold one today, have a Corona, and I didn't even bring up Cinco de Mayo. So maybe we just have to do it after the fact. We'll celebrate Cinco de Mayo tomorrow on the 6th. Does that make sense? I don't know, Jonesy. Either way, it's never a bad thing if you're having an ice-cold Corona. And speaking of Cinco de Mayo, though, folks, thanks to our friends at Lone Star, we're giving away $150 gift cards to celebrate. Lone Star has their Cinco specials, like the Fajita Party Pack, available all week long. You can enter for your shot at winning the gift card by texting the word party. If you don't know how to spell it, you don't deserve to win. You got to text party to 590-590 right now. Find more Cinco specials and info at sportsnet.ca/590. Happy Cinco de Mayo to everybody. I'm sure they're having Taco Wednesday instead of Taco Tuesday. Thanks to Stephen Brunt and O'Shea Brissett for joining us. Again, Baseball Central is coming up next, and then we're back tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern for more Smith and Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.